the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and I have a rock star for you right now. We've got Rob Mondavi Jr. He is a winemaker and the co-founder of Michael Mondavi Family Estate. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, great to be here. Great to come in and talk a little bit about the wines and what makes our crazy business tick.
And you brought wine, which is even better, so we already like you.
Thank the Lord. And you know what? I tried to bring two that are pretty interesting, something a little more classic with the Cabernet Sauvignon, and then rosés are just hot in the marketplace
today.
They
are so hot. I am the target audience, being a female millennial. Love me some rosé.
Yep.
But let's talk about your winery. Tell me a little bit about it and how you grew up in the wine business.
Growing up in the wine business is incredible. The irony is you don't know it's incredible until you essentially move out from your very beautiful and insular space. But you grow up in the wine business, you see things and you do things that are just beautiful and very focused in your industry. And our industry is so rich with wine and food pairings, great chefs coming in. I remember being a child and getting to meet Julia Child. I mean, and you know.
So cool.
I offered, of course, to let her ride my brand new 10-speed bicycle at the time, and the poor thing had no idea what to do with that. But it's great, though, because you meet these wonderful icons of the industry, and they become, you know, part of the world you live and grow up in. So they don't seem anything different than a family friend. And you start to get out into the world and realize then how profoundly special it is and was that I got to hang with Julia Child when I was 12 years old.
That is so cool. And then not to mention just the invaluable skills you must have gained learning from your family and just growing up in the business. So tell me some things that you learned growing up that now you still keep with you today as a winemaker.
Yeah, you know, my family's always been a proponent of green farming. You know, we didn't have the quote green farming term, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, but we always felt a compelling need to farm in a healthful, responsible way. When you live in the vineyards and your kids are running around the vineyards, you want to make sure what you're doing is healthy. What you're putting into the vineyards is A, good for you, and B, is going to be good for your family and good for the people who then be drinking your wines. So green farming and sustainability has always been a part of what we do, even though we didn't necessarily have the right catchphrase back then.
And what was it like working with your family growing up?
Sticky. Literally sticky, and not being cheeky, because everything in the winery when the grapes come in is covered with sugar. The grapes are about 26 degrees sugared, and everything that they come in contact with has this beautiful little sticky film on it, and it's sweet. You know, you can't help but smell it and feel it in the air. So when you grow up in that environment, you have a heightened sense of smell, heightened sense of taste, and you love it. And everything about the valley when the fermentations are going on is perfumed and aromatic, and there's a bustle. So it's a whole community that changes and ebbs and flows and evolves around the grape harvest to make these beautiful products.
It sounds amazing, but I will say a lot of people advise you to not work with family. So are there any cons to working with family?
There's always cons to working with family, but the pros outweighs the cons. Now, the cons, I think, are fairly obvious, though. At the end of the day, when you want to hang your shovel and you want to just relax and maybe vent about the day, who do you vent to?
Yeah.
You know, when you and there's hierarchy in any company, and you know, if your dad's the top of the food chain at the time, then you know, you're complaining about your boss, but you're also, you know, lamenting about then family. So you have to be very careful of how you balance taking it personally because it's dad, or is it because this is my CEO and he wants
right.
more research, he wants more data on a project. And I think once an individual and a collective family can learn to compartmentalize what is business and what is personal, it runs easier. But how do you separate that? It is.
It's tricky, but yeah, the more you can, the better. Great advice on that. And you did decide to leave the family business and wine for a little bit. Was that a good decision? And what did you learn?
It was a great decision. And we have to digress to the question of why, though. So after university, my sister and I wanted to be in their original company, and we wanted to apply for management positions, my mom and dad wanted my sister and I to be outside the wine industry and outside our business specifically for at least 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Go out, learn something different, stub your toe. Understand that when a boss tells you no, or that you need to go do your homework a little bit deeper, or here's a great success, that this is part of life. And I chose a few different businesses. I was in the cigar business and made cigars in Central America and imported them and distributed them throughout the United States. And that was a kick. That was a tremendous experience, and I loved it. But it also, when you go outside of the family business, yes, there is the lost time of being in the family business, but there's the gain of what is out there in the world, and there is the gain that you want to be within your family business. So then when you come back into it, it's not just a passion because you grew up in it, it's a passion and a calling that you return to.
And that's amazing that it still is a passion, because sometimes people grow up in a family business and they go, oh, this would be easy to stay with the family business. Yes. It would be lucrative, but I'm just not passionate about it. But obviously, you must be so passionate about wine, too.
I love it.
Yeah. Amazing. So at what point did you guys co-found and start Michael Mondavi Winery?
Great. And that's the transition between the Robert Mondavi Winery and then when we left there and started the Michael Mondavi Family Estate. And this is this lovely little, ball of twine that's confusing. So digressing in history, the fast history is
that. Yes, please inform us.
My grandfather Robert and my father Michael Mondavi in 1966 had their first vintage at the Robert Mondavi Winery. From 66 until 2004, the family was together. We were public for a blink of an eye from 94 to 2004. And in 2004, that moment in time happened where Dad and I decided, and my sister decided, it was time to leave the Robert Mondavi and to start something small and personal again. And then shortly thereafter, the Robert Mondavi Winery sold to a large drinks company out of New York. So we decided that we wanted to be back to what was important to us, which was making small lot, beautifully well-thought wines. What I brought in today to show you is something classic. We have our Cabernet here, which is only 1,000 cases, but it's very, very much more formal, very elegant, and then something fun. So we want to be able to have wines that address what's the market trend today, and then we also want to be able to have wines that are very stately, very focused, that we can lay down in the cellar for whether it's a year or whether it's 5 years or 30 years.
And because you are a little bit smaller, you probably can pivot quicker and stay on trend faster, right?
Oh, absolutely. So my sister, back to family business, right? My sister created this package here on the rosé, and it's just beautiful, this creative bottle of silkscreen and a new top, which addresses some of the closure issues of the time. This is almost what I call an apothecary-style top. So it's easy to get to, easy to open, easy to close back up and store and reuse, and I love that.
Yeah, that's amazing. So tell me a little bit more about your role in the business now. Like, what is a typical day like, if there is one?
A typical day doesn't have a nice jacket on here. A typical day is, jeans, some hiking boots, and then I have to have a shirt too. But, and then into the vineyards or into the winery. And the vineyards for me are tantamount to the success of a great wine. So we spend a very disproportionate amount of time in the vineyards and making sure that everything is set up so that when we do bring the grapes into the vineyards, that it's about as close to a layup as you can get. And so vineyards and winemaking are where I spend my day.
That's awesome. And I know that you said that having that family touch on a winery really, really helps a winery be successful. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
It's to me, how does one look at the responsibility of carrying a wine year after year and then looking at the generation that came before you and then the next generation to come? And I think that there's a heightened level of responsibility when you look at your own tradition and you look at then what you hope to pass to your children if they're interested in it. So I think that by having family-owned and family-operated wineries, there's a heightened sense of being, a heightened sense of what is going into the bottle, and a heightened sense of what quality you want stamped in there, because wine is living and breathing, and it can last generations.
How do you strike that balance between carrying on the family legacy, but also making it your own, too, and staying with the times and being progressive in your industry?
It's tough, and we've addressed that question in a little bit of a different way within our family collection of wines. So I brought two for us to talk about. One's Isabel Mondavi, and the other's Animo, but we have a third one, really, called Emblem. And so we have to have wines that are more trendy, and then the next level up, Emblem, which is a little more trendy, but also can be traditional, so it's not tacking quickly. And then, lastly is your highest tier wine, which really should be able to be sat down in front of somebody in Bordeaux or a wine collector from around the world, whether it's 10 years ago or 10 years in advance. That allows the individual family members, as they're coming up through the ranks, to have different levels of creativity.
Yeah.
And it's a really neat way to look at it. I love the fact that if I look at a fashion house, I can see that a fashion house 50 years ago has the images that it does today, but it is completely new and avant-garde and current in the moment, yet it still has that semblance of the past and the history of the past.
That's a really great analogy. I love it. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about breaking into the wine industry. Is it possible if you didn't grow up in a family winery? We're going to answer that and so much more when we come back. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Hi, I'm Mike Ditcher. On the field, they called me Iron Mike. But some days, even Iron Mike can feel a little rusty. So I turned to Blue Emu. Blue Emu's non-greasy, deep-penetrating formula gets down deep for big-time comfort. And more importantly, it doesn't leave me smelling like a locker room. Now, if you excuse me, I have some yelling to do. You hit like old men! Blue Emu. It works fast, and you won't stink.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest-growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day, watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, Wow, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
You shouldn't.
The biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and we continue our conversation now with Rob Mondavi Jr. He is a winemaker and the co-founder of Michael Mondavi Family Estate. So obviously you had the benefit of growing up in wineries, but is it possible to break into the industry if you didn't?
You know, it is. And I say it is with a little spring and emphasis because I love it when new people are coming into the industry. You do get a little jealous, but let's talk about why, though. Because I think when new people are coming into our business, they're coming in because they have a great passion for it. This business is a tough business economically to profit. It takes time. We have a long capital cycle, a long ROI cycle. So people coming into this business have a passion for what they're doing. And when people have a passion for what they are doing, they tend to make great products. And they seek out the best ways to do that, new technologies, new opportunities, and just little nuances that make wine one step better. So I'm happy that they can come in and that they can get started.
What if they don't know the technology piece or the agriculture piece, I should say? Is that something you can get help with?
Absolutely. And today is probably the richest opportunity that we've had in the last half century for somebody from outside the industry to come into the industry. Today, there are remarkable winemaking consultants who are available for hire. Now, granted, you have to come with the right idea, the right capital to do that, but there are some beautiful names there, whether it be names that are generational in Napa Valley, names that are the darling of the press at the current moment who are putting out just beautiful scores. So we do have winemaking expertise available. We also have vineyard expertise available. People can come in and buy a vineyard and then retain a consultant specific to vineyard management. They can also come into Napa Valley, and if they're not ready to purchase land or purchase a vineyard, they can find a broker who can help them acquire grapes by the ton is how we sell them. And then it's about 65 cases a ton, so you can do a little bit of math and figure out what you need to get started.
Yeah.
But it's nice that it is accessible for people. And I like to believe that most of the time when people are coming in, they have the right intentions to make something great. Occasionally someone makes them plonk, but they tend to leave fairly quickly.
But like you said, most people have the passion, and you touched on that you need capital to start a business, and you have had capital when you've started your businesses. So what advice do you have for making your money go a long way?
Well, the first advice I would have is don't go into the wine business. But, and I say that with, you know, cheeky love. Because on so when you come into the wine industry, you typically need about 2 to 3 years before you'll have a return. So if I harvested this Cabernet Sauvignon this particular year, realistically, I would have to wait 24 to 36 months for it to hit the marketplace. That's a long capital hold. So what I recommend for people who want to come into this business is you have to understand your ROI models. And I would have at least 5 to 7 years of available capital. Expect net negative for at least the first 5 years, and then net neutral 5-6, and then profit after that. It's a long capital
intensive business. So yeah, you really got to be passionate.
Passionate, patient, and willing to persevere, because then you have the market cycles on top of that. So it is beautiful, though. But once you are in this, you're involved with agriculture. You're involved with the seasonality of just the sun, the winter, the spring, the fall. You have it all there. And then you have this beautiful product to come with as well. So I do think that having the great business plan, of course, that's standard blocking and tackling. The right idea with the wine and the right venue to market it. Are your friends going to buy the wine? Will they buy the wine the second and the third time? So one has to be very careful, because cellars fill up quickly. And it is lovely, though, because it is a product that not only can you age, but if you encourage your friends, they tend to help you drink.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you are self-funded, so this is especially maybe accessible for somebody who can self-fund their business. Are there investors in this space? Is it something where you can get investors and start a winery?
There are opportunities for that. I've seen that with some of my friends who I've grown up with, who have decided that they wanted to, instead of taking all the opportunity and all the risk as well for themselves, they have opened up the opportunity and they've invited investors to come in. And being an investor in the wine business has some remarkable perks. First and foremost, there's access to the wines. Secondly, you tend to invest into a group of experts who are going to handle the winemaking and the vineyards and the go-to-market strategies, and then you get to partake in that. So it is possible to either start something and to gain investors, or to find really beautiful high-tier wine companies to invest into. It's all private market. It's all word of mouth. It's very sub sigillum, but it's wonderful. So I know if you want it, you can find it.
And I know that you're a big fan of having mentors.
Yes.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
So I'm very lucky. I've had different mentors across the board, whether it's a business mentor who I look to for my father, Michael Mondavi, who really helped to create Napa Valley and the California wine industry. You're not going to find a better mentor than him. He's seen it, done it, built it, and then done it again. So, and I always think that my father is remarkably and one of the best teachers I've ever seen. So, you know, I like to learn from him, and I always encourage him to please, you know, have more speaking engagements, go to Davis, go to Fresno, speak more, because he has so much to offer. Winemaking mentors, then, different type of topic. Finding someone who will not just tell you, you know, what should you do when the rains are coming? Do I pick now? Do I wait? But someone who inspired you to think and to challenge you to draw it out of yourself to make these decisions. And I had a great mentor like that with Tony Coltrane, who I've knew since, oh, goodness gracious, since 1973 I've known him. So, you know, finding the mentors that you can trust who will inspire you. And to me, a mentor is one that pulls the answer out of you, but one that doesn't give it to you.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Now, obviously, winemaking business, very competitive business.
Yes.
Everyone's got their own theory on what makes you stand out, differentiate yourself from the competition. Is it the label? Is it the price point? Maybe it's several things. Can you speak to what makes you stand out and competitive in this industry?
You know, as an industry, it's a little bit of everything. And fortunately, there's great market analytics. You know, we can understand if you want to be a California AVA wine and you're $10.99 a bottle, that is one set of matrix that is great. You know, you need the supermarket channel, and then you need to go beyond that. You need your advertising, your funding. That is big business. That is hundreds of thousands of cases. It is a tough category to enter. Profit margins are even more narrow. As we move from a bigger region then into Sonoma, Napa, we start to find that your brands can be smaller. There tends to be a higher investment level on a per case basis or per acre basis if you're investing there, but there also is then the return as well. I like being smaller. I like being focused. I love the craft orientation of being hands-on you know, walking in the vineyards, creating the fermentations and so on. That's where I really enjoy it. But to gain that entry, whether it's the volume tier or the high tier, there is information out there and there is information available. I personally think Silicon Valley Bank is probably the most astute and it has the best depth of information available. And I truthfully think that they are quite brilliant in how they analyze the market.
Really good stuff. Thank you so much for your time and all of your insight. What a fun industry you're in.
Well, I love that you had me today, and thank you for talking about wine. It's a great passion of mine and the family, and look for more to come from us.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Rob Mondavi Jr., he's a winemaker and co-founder of Michael Mondavi Family Estate, and we are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. U.S. entrepreneurs continue to project a strong business outlook despite a slight dip in economic confidence. According to the Spring 2019 Bank of America Small Business Owner Report, nearly 70% plan to expand and more than half predict rising revenues. Even as growth remains a focus, entrepreneurs are taking steps to protect against potential threats to their business. Nearly two-thirds have a business continuity plan in the event of a natural disaster, while the majority have taken steps to prepare for an economic downturn and secure data against a cyber breach. Sharon Miller, head of Small Business, Bank of America.
Small business owners remain optimistic about their business outlook and their ability to grow in the year ahead. However, while most entrepreneurs are taking steps to protect their business from potential threats such as natural disasters, an economic downturn, or a cyber breach, a sizable number still are not.
For more, visit newsroom.bankofamerica.com.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. Our guest today joining us is Daniel Schindler. He is the co-founder of Donuts, Inc. Daniel, it's great to have you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So tell us, what is Donuts, Inc.? Because it actually has nothing to do with donuts.
No, and having put on a few pounds, maybe it should have been called carrots. I'd be better off. Donuts stands for Domain Nuts. We are the world's largest registry for new top-level domains. So instead of .com or .net, which are arguably meaningless, we offer names that are very specific. So .media, .marketing, .capital, .finance, .money, .football, .restaurant. And so we provide those through the regular channels of what are called registrars, domain name registrars, companies like GoDaddy and Web.com. We're the wholesaler. And we've been in business selling these names now for a little over 2 years, and it's rocking.
It is. So why would people go with that? I mean, for obvious reasons, right? It sounds cooler, right? If I was like consulting.money or something like. But I know most people say, hey, the best thing you can have is a .com. So I know you obviously don't align with that. So why do you say that having the .money or .whatever is better?
Well, because they mean something. You know, your name.com doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, what the heck is .com?
Right, exactly. You ask 95 out of every 100 registrants of a .com name and they won't tell you. But that's fine. You know, it's had a nigh on monopoly for 30 years. So, you know, that's what people think are, you know, is the name to have. But, you know, the regulator of the domain name space called ICANN, when it was created, was required to provide consumer choice and competition. And that's what this does. And with 118 odd million names in the .com zone file, it's very difficult to find the name of your, you know, that you want. And so the namespace has been opened up to provide these meaningful endings that not just make more sense to you as the business operator or, you know, the person with a special interest, but
how did you get into this business,
resonate with your audience?
You said 2 years ago you guys got in this, but how? You don't just like stumble into the domain space.
Well, I've been in the domain name space since about 1994. I bought my first sort of domains, kind of when it started on in a commercial way.
Yeah.
And I formed a company back in 1999 in the UK, where from whence I came. Mm. And you know, we built websites and sold domain names to you know, companies in the UK. Which was very successful for its short life. Unfortunately.
So that's what you did before donutsing?
That's what I did before. So I've been in the space for a considerable amount of time.
Wow. And so what do you think is one of the best lessons you've learned on your journey? Maybe it has something to do with the industry you're in, maybe it doesn't, but as an entrepreneur, you've been an entrepreneur for over 20 years. What has been one of the best lessons so far you've learned on your journey?
I think dedication. I think, you know, discipline, being prepared to put in the hours, not just long hours, but smart hours.
What's the distinction there? Because a lot of times, you know, some people will say, oh, you got to work hard, but I think working smart is better, so.
Yeah, I agree with you. But you know what, if you can do both, then, you know, it's the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
You know, my father was my mentor. I first got into business life with my dad. It's all I ever wanted to do, save for being a professional footballer back in the day as a young kid. So I think, you know, you need to be resilient. I think entrepreneurialism is a bit of an arrogant word. I don't like it myself. Maybe it just means you're prepared to try things and fail. But you have to have discipline. You have to, take some risks, calculated risks, as opposed to gambles.
What is Donuts Inc. doing to make sure that you have and maintain a competitive edge?
Right, that's a great question. And we're very fortunate that we had the foresight and the funding to be able to go and secure those assets. So once we've bought those top level domains, they're ours. So there is no competition in that regard. There are some areas of competition, but if I own .restaurant and you own .football, your customer's not the same customers as mine. Mm-hmm. So we had that, you know, that was a huge benefit to us, that we found backers, venture capitalists who believed in us and believed in our concept, funded us tremendously, and allowed us to go forth when the application window by the regulator was opened up to secure these assets.
Okay, so you just said something I want to touch on right there, and that is you guys got funding. Mm. And that's probably one of the hottest trends right now in the entrepreneurial space is how can I get funded? And whether it's Crowdfunder, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, Shark Tank, there's so many things, incubators, almost everybody getting into business is trying to get funded. And I think that there's a right time and a wrong time and a right type of money and a right type of partner and the wrong types. But what made you guys feel like it was the right move to get funded?
Well, the assets are extraordinarily expensive. So we knew we needed many, 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 many tens or more of millions of dollars. Mm. So we didn't have that ourselves as a funding, you know, co-founding group. So we had some and we put some in, and I think investors like to see that you have some skin in the game.
If they're gonna be putting millions in, they wanna see that you're putting something in.
Yeah, and I think it helps to be, and you know, this is a question more for them than for us, but I think it helps to have a track record. And I think investors wanna look at the plan and say, yeah, I think this plan has got.
So what plan did you guys create? What was the thing that allowed them to invest in you, or it was the tipping point that made them say, you guys are the people that we want to put tens of millions of dollars behind?
I think there are a number of factors. I think, you know, venture capitalists raise funds in order to invest. Here are four guys come along who were regarded by the outside world, not our own self-proclamations, as the A-team in the industry. Mm. We've been in it a long time. We weren't fresh out of school. There was a channel, a route to market that already existed. There was a regulator who had approved us. And so buying these assets, a bit like brick and mortar, it's virtual real estate, there was some security in that. So I think combination of those factors. I think all investors look at who they're investing in as much as what they're investing in. If this plan doesn't quite work out, and let's be honest.
It's like the horse and the jockey kind of thing?
Yeah. No plan has ever been exactly, you know, as it was in the Excel sheet.
Yeah, it usually does worse or it does better.
Are they flexible? Can they actually, you know, maneuver? Hmm. So it's more a question for them, I think, maybe, but those are probably some of the reasons.
What are some of the mistakes you see other people out there making with company culture that they should avoid?
Well, I think not having a horizontal-ish org chart is
what
the
does
one.
That mean?
It means, you know, having this big pecking order, this hierarchy where this guy sits up here and this girl sits here and this guy sits there and there's a whole chain.
Yeah,
there's
so not having that?
Not having that.
That's the problem?
Yeah, I think that is a problem. I think we do have reporting lines, of course, you have to some extent, but there is no, I outrank you type of mentality. I don't think that's the case. And hopefully the team will say that. You know, we all have a good rapport.
What is the company vision or mission or the purpose behind Donuts Inc.? Because, yeah, it's great to make money, but at the end of the day, don't just make money, make a difference, because it's not just as important so much as how you make your, I mean, as the money you make, but how you actually go about making your money. So the vision, the mission, the purpose, what is it for Donuts Inc.?
Yeah, so I'm not going to pretend that the primary driver isn't money.
You need to keep the business afloat, obviously.
You do, and to do well. And from our own individual perspectives, but, you know, we have a responsibility to our investors, you know, who put in considerable sums and expect to get a return. So, you know, people will say, oh, it's not about the money. It is absolutely about the money. But it's not the only thing. Mm. You know, we do want to change the world a bit. Now, maybe that's one hell of a statement. But providing these names that no one else has ever provided before, so that the world is using them every day, whether they be, you know, Lady Gaga, who uses one of our names, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, whether it be DannyWillett.golf, who just won the Masters, or millions of other examples, we feel that we are certainly striving to change the world.
Because you really are, because at the end of the day, if that little domain gives them a competitive edge, if that domain helps them stand out more online, if that domain helps them in any way, shape, or form, you and your business, by some form of means, is actually helping serve small businesses, which is the backbone of the economy.
And it's so, not an if. We definitely are.
You are. And so that's the point, is that that is really what you guys are doing, to serve and give back. You're literally having the potential to affect all the small businesses, not only in the United States, but globally.
Absolutely.
And so that's where you guys are making your impact.
We are. 40% roughly of our business comes from the United States.
Okay.
So 60% doesn't. Comes from the rest of the world. And, you know, let's look at .com. And recognize what it's achieved. You know, it had a monopoly, but it's successful. The reason that you can't find great names in the primary market in .com is because they've been sold. They've been successful. That's why the regulator has opened up the namespace. So now we're providing new entrepreneurs, new bloggers, new people with special interests, people who are into sport, and business owners a new landscape, a new namespace to be able to, you know, resonate with their audiences and grow. You know, today's giant brands who are in .com, they had to start somewhere.
Definitely. And so what you're saying is that anyone has a domain out there and they go, oh man, my company domain's already owned by somebody. Maybe they're not even using it. Because that's what happens a lot of times with .coms. You're an entrepreneur, you're starting your business, you come up with the name of your business or whatever it is, and you go on to buy your website, you're all excited, and then you find your .com is taken, and you settle for trying to come up with a new name for your website just to try to fit the fact that, oh, well, we couldn't.
That's right.
And so that's a lot of the time is what people
do. It's nearly all the time. Again, not to be critical of .com, but that is because of their success.
And you're providing a solution to that potential problem in the marketplace.
Yeah. Interestingly, our model was never predicated on people jumping out of their .coms or .nets or whatever they're in into the new landscape. It was about us buying our share of the new landscape.
Yeah.
But the reality is that a lot of people have got long, convoluted names.
Just to try to fit the .com.
Yeah. Now they realize that there's an easier way.
Yeah.
You don't need a whole bus to get your domain name on. You can have short
So names. We've got Cheryl and Steve joining us, and they're here with us right now, and they both have 9-to-5 jobs. Together they have this idea that they're so passionate about bringing out into the marketplace, and they want to be able to cut the cord from their 9-to-5 job, their only source of income, so that they can go into the area of their passion, create the quality of life, the time freedom, and the business that they've always dreamed of. But they're uncertain about how to get started. They're uncertain if they have the connections, the resources, the knowledge, the know-how, the distribution, whatever it is. So they're not cutting the cord yet. How do they know when the right time is, and what would that look like for them to get started?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've always, and I used to have a small sort of angel capital business, raising small sums for people who are just like that.
Yeah.
I always worked on the pie theory of, you know, everything takes three times as long and costs three times as much. So
which is so true.
Yeah. So I think, you know, make sure you do have the resources. Weigh up what you have to lose. You know, my kids are entrepreneurial and have started, you know, different things straight out of college. And having tried some, you know, employment positions as well. Yeah. When you're young and you don't have mortgages to pay and mouths to feed, that's the time to be, you know, take a little bit more risk. But, you know, sometimes people just come to the end of their tether in what they're doing and think, it's got to be better than this.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone who does that, goes with the best of intentions. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, when it doesn't work out, you know, pick yourself up and dust yourself down and start all over again. You have to. You've got to be Teflon coated.
Daniel, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
And pleasure's all mine. Thank
Appreciate
you very much,
you. Mark. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. Home Advisor can help get you started. Home Advisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. Home Advisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to homeadvisor.com or download the free app. Home Advisor.
Hey, I just heard that people at my friend's company got sextortion emails.
Yeah, it's a popular type of spear phishing attack.
Wow, that sounds serious.
It is. Scammers claim to have a compromising video of the victim and threaten to share it with their contact list unless they pay a ransom.
What if they target someone at our company?
We're secured with Barracuda Sentinel. It uses artificial intelligence to block spear phishing attacks, including sextortion emails.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Kriebel.
The soft drink police are at it again. Politicians in Seattle are furiously trying to stop the consumption of soft drinks. They stew and fret about health problems such as obesity, diabetes, and tooth decay. Seattle imposed a high tax on the evil beverages, thinking they could use the revenue to give low-income families vouchers for fruits and vegetables. Does that mean Seattle residents are now healthier? Of course not. It means residents now purchase their soft drinks outside the city. The city council never thought of that, but retailers in the suburbs did. They beefed up their soft drink advertising, and Seattle residents just smuggle their Coke in. That's the law of supply and demand, and it's just not that complicated.
For more, check out our podcast.
How do you align your employees to your vision? We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars, here to help us answer that question, Taylor Freeman. He's the CEO of Upload. So first of all, let's talk about what is your vision for your company?
Sure. So I like to think about vision in terms of the why statement first. And, you know, for us, it's really learning from the past of mobile and internet and computing and looking at how we can actually use this platform to unlock the next level of human potential, right? Looking at education, looking at training, looking at communication. So for us, the grand vision is actually making sure that as this platform shift occurs, the whole industry is focused on using this tool to actually inspire and create a better world. And so that sort of is the guiding vision. And then sort of the what and the how evolve from that. And so that's really just depends on what the market needs, you know, what the customers really need to get to the next level.
And then, of course, the values are an extension of the vision. Yeah. Give me an example of a couple of your company's values.
Yeah, sure. So one thing that's super important to us as a company is to stay neutral. And so what I mean by that is to make sure that we're not going to pick sides with Oculus or with HTC or with Sony, and that as a community and as a company, we're focused on the whole and that we're really trying to drive that forward. That's one. Another value would be a team player. I know that's, you know, very straightforward, but it's really incredibly important for the cohesion of a team if everyone understands that they may have to step up for something that's not directly in their wheelhouse. So there are a number of these things that we kind of focus on. And, you know, I think it's incredibly important to reiterate those things all the time to the team so that they really know that those are the core things. And if people don't resonate with that, then over time, you know, you'll have your natural selection of the people that will sort of push that vision along with those values forward.
Yeah, super important that your team is on board with your vision and your values. And it starts at the hiring. So when you're looking at someone's resume, you bring them in, you interview them, obviously skill set most important. But beyond that, are you looking for certain cues as to whether or not they're going to fit in with the vision?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, the importance of skill set is on a scale over time. And so when you're starting a company, the skill set is, it's definitely important, especially depending on if you're building a certain type of product or you need a certain skill or something that's really dependent on key skills. But if you're sort of just pushing forward a mission and a vision and you have a lot of grit and tact, like that is almost more important than like one key skill in my mind. It's just people that will push it all the way through. But then as the organization grows, as you have more specialized needs, as it becomes a real process-driven organization, then you need people that are like laser-focused expert masters in one domain that obviously have the capacity to understand the whole and how it connects. So I think it really does evolve over time.
It's hard to measure vision and values in an interview.
It is.
So what do you look for to see if they're a good fit?
Totally. So we have a set of company values that we'll run people through, which, you know, in an interview, everyone sort of has a fake smile, mm-hmm. you know, even if they are super genuine, you know, they're still sort of on the spot. They want to make a great impression.
Yeah.
So they'll typically agree with you. Sometimes you'll notice, though, that people that really do align, they'll just have that spark and be like, oh my God, yes, this is exactly what I believe in. You know, here's multiple examples of how I've demonstrated these values in the past. And so that's interesting. And like when you're interviewing someone, it can feel kind of awkward to ask them questions that you know that you'd feel put on the spot being asked.
Yeah.
But that's really important because people that do align, it'll be natural to them. And even if it takes them a second to stop and think, you know, that's still fine as long as they really are genuine in their response. So that's one way. Also, you know, speaking to references is another kind of silly thing. You know, I get it because it does shed light on some things, but...
And what culture they were coming from, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You get some insight into that.
Yeah, and then there's a quote that I love from... Plato, that's like an hour of play is better than 1,000 hours of conversation to understand someone. And so I find that to be really interesting. So like just
working
with someone.
So do you take them out on an activity for their interview?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm sure that you know when you're with friends and you're going out and then that one person sort of steps up and starts planning everything and is like on top of it. Like you can sort of through simulating environments where there would be an intense sort of work environment, you can sort of see how people step up, how they react, how they solve problems.
Ah, that's genius. Love it. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Taylor Freeman. He is the CEO of Upload, answering the question, how do you align your employees to your vision? So once you've hired the right people, hopefully, you obviously have to start implementing these visions and values. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about doing that?
Sure. So a couple things that I've found to be effective are during the weekly meetings, we do every day, Monday at 10 a.m., full team meeting. We actually, at the end, we go through the values and we talk them aloud. And we also sort of look at, you know, examples of how people have lived those values and we'll reward people that have demonstrated a successful sort of execution on one of the things.
And just so, what? Give me an example of what you'll reward them with.
So I think, for example, like surprise and delight is one of our values. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are folks in the organization that will come forward and out of nowhere, they'll just bring an incredible opportunity that they were never tasked to create, but like they just understood the vision of the company, they understood where we wanted to go, and they manifested this opportunity. So for that, you know, cash is obviously one form of incentive. And so I think cash is important in some ways, but recognition within the community, highlighting sort of their effort as someone that really stepped up as part of the team and making that sort of a focal point so that the team has a reference point for what stepping up looks like, I think is very important. And then everyone is so driven by different motivations, right? Some people are like very far on the spectrum of cash. Some people are very far on the spectrum of just recognition and appreciation. So I think it's incredibly important to understand your employees and understand
as individuals, everyone's different.
Yeah, and like, because you know, with your friends, like different things will incentivize them in different ways. And so understanding how to actually get someone really genuinely excited and inspired and then reward them with something that they're just so incredibly grateful for, I think that's really sort of the secret ticket.
Yeah, because some people are motivated by cash, but some people just want to feel valued and appreciated. So that's awesome that you take the time to get to know your employees. Thank you so much to my guest, Taylor Freeman. He's the CEO of Upload. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
This information is given with the understanding that the host nor Business Rockstars is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.